This is the fourth public talk by Mr. J. Krishnamurti on April 15th, 1979, Ojai, California.
May we go on talking over together what we were discussing or inquiring yesterday and the last weekend too. May we? First of all, if one may inquire, I wonder why you all come. This is not asked as a flippant question, but actually to find out why most of us take the trouble to come here. Is it because we are so used to being told what to do? We are not able to solve our own petty little problems or great problems, or able to answer our own inquiries and challenges. So we look to others, the analysts, the priests, the specialists, and the gurus. They're always with us. And I'm asking, why is it that we are not able to solve our own problems? Why we inquire or ask or demand or seek out various types of analysts and psychologists and specialists and so on, and ask them to help us? Is it because we ourselves are indolent, lazy, we haven't the time, and we think we have time when we pay others to tell us what we do, what we should do? And we got into this habit, or into this conditioning, that others have gone into the subject, have studied a great deal, know a great deal, and perhaps they will be able to help us. So we are always, it seems to me, relying on others to help us to escape this trap we are in. The religions throughout the world have offered this. Organized, excellently put together with their rituals, dogmas and so on. And we happily slip into that. And we are never able to resolve our own deep problems. We hand ourselves over to another. I wonder why we do this. It's all right physically when the organism is not healthy to go to a doctor, to a surgeon, and so on. When you want to build a house, go to an architect. And so, perhaps the same concept drives us to go to somebody else to help us. We are never able to read our own book, our own history. And so we are perpetually depending on others. The group therapy, the various types of psychosomatic treatments, psychotherapies, you know, the multiplication of all that. And we human beings, wherever we live, Far East or Near East and here, we are incapable of reading the whole story of mankind, which is ourselves. And is it possible for us to read this book which has been handed down generation after generation for many, many millennia, to read the story which we are, not leave one chapter unread, but read from the beginning to the end, the whole movement of mankind and his evolution, both physically and psychologically, inwardly. If we are able to read this book, which is astonishingly entertaining, if I may use that word, fascinating, and opens the door to enormous possibilities. So, as we are, the rest of mankind, psychologically, and if we know how to read this book, then perhaps we shall be able to alter the course of our lives. Because that's what we are concerned with. At least the speaker is concerned about that, to bring about a radical transformation of the human mind and so bring about a good society, a society where we shall have order, peace, some kind of security, some kind of happiness, and go beyond all that, inquiring into that which is immeasurable. So we must first, it seems to us, learn how to read this book. So we must find out how to observe, not only visually, but observe the whole movement of our consciousness, of ourselves, with all our complexities, with all our anxieties, fears, pleasures, joys, accumulated superstitions, both the superstitions of the scientists, of the psychologists, of the religious people, and the whole thing, to be able to read very, very, very precisely, clearly, and without any mistake. And that's what we're going to do this morning, if we can. Learn, not that I'm your instructor, we are doing this together. Learn how to look in this extraordinary is the self, which is the ego, the personality, the tendency, the characteristics, the impulses, the inhibitions, the all that, which is our consciousness. To read that and to read it, one must have eyes and ears which are not dull, which are not blocked, which are not caught up in some kind of fanciful illusions, as most people are. So one must obviously first inquire. We are doing this together. I'm not doing it for you, or you're not doing it for me. We are doing it together. It's a dialogue between two people, though there are many people here. It's a dialogue, a conversation between two friends who are concerned with the world, the terrible things that are going on in the world, and their own complex problems of relationship, their sense of lack of love, and their burden of sorrow, and the problem of death. And as one has recently heard this word meditation, brought over from the East, though there has been in Christianity another form of contemplation, perhaps, which is totally different from meditation, and to find out if there is something beyond all this, not invented by thought, but something actual, something that not an imagination, a thing put together by the mind or by the hand. So we're going to read all that. And to do that, one must have clear eyesight. To read this vast book, which is ourselves. Observation implies that there must be no distortion in what we're reading. Right? Any form of distorted observation will prevent clarity of reading. So, are we distorted? Is our perception, our inquiry, our observation, is it distorted? Please, we are asking each other this. I'm not telling you it is or it's not. But we are asking, inquiring, exploring into this question. It is distorted if I have a motive in reading the book and wanting to change what is in the book. Because if the observation is already, has already come to a conclusion that the end of the book must be this, or that there are certain chapters which the mind doesn't like in its observation, or that it must go beyond all this, all those factors bring about distortion, obviously. I hope you're following all this. So I must be, before I begin to read the book, there must be clarity and the great energy that puts aside any form of distortion. That is, if one is already caught in an illusion, which most people are, then our concern is not the book, but why the mind is caught in an illusion. Because with a mind that is already in an illusion, it can't read. Therefore, the concern then is, why is the mind caught in an illusion? You're following on this? Is it fear? Is it that what I may find I may dislike, I may be disappointed, depressed, and therefore I prefer to have my own illusions, my own concepts, my own conclusions above the book, and therefore I'm incapable of reading. So my concern then is to find out why this mind, which is inquiring, which demands that it should read the book, why it is caught in an illusion. Is it fear? We went into it yesterday, in the question of fear. And we won't go into it now because we have other things to go into. If it is fear, we explain fear is the movement of thought as time. If we've gone into it since yesterday. And we said the art of observation consists in giving thought its own place. Therefore the mind can totally, completely, absolutely be free of fear. Don't accept my word for this, but it is so if you've gone into it. Psychologically, there is an ending to fear. And there is the fear of pain, physical, organic pain, which we also talked about yesterday, which is to not to continue when the pain is over as memory, which is the registration of the pain of yesterday, and that registration is memory, and that memory says, hoping that there will not be pain another time. We went into that, and we will go into it much more in detail. So, when the mind is caught in an illusion, is it aware that it is an illusion? You follow me? Or it doesn't know at all it is an illusion? If the mind doesn't know that it's living in an illusion, in a make-believe world, how is it to become aware of it? You understand my question? I'm caught in an illusion. The illusion the word illusion means, look at it, to play. To play with ideas. To play with things that are not actual, which are conceptual, a series of conclusions and beliefs which are not actual. I play with them. If this belief doesn't suit me, I take on another belief. I play with beliefs. And this playing is illusion. Because I cannot face the actuality of what is actually going on. So, mind invents, believes, all the rest of it. Now, to be aware of it, To know I am in illusion. When you know you are in, it's finished. You understand? It's only when I do not know that I am in an illusion, then there's no possibility of moving out of it. But the moment I am aware that it is I am caught in illusion, the very awareness dispels illusion. Obviously. So, my mind then is capable of reading this book. Because we are concerned with bringing about a radical transformation of human mind, which has lived for millennia that this way we are living, which is the quarrels, the anxieties, the violence, the brutality, all that's going on around us and in us. And such human beings can only live in disorder and can never bring about a good society, a good human being. You will never understand what is goodness. So we are doing that. We are inquiring into this. Then, what is this book? Which is myself, which is yourself, which is the story of mankind. Not the story of mankind printed in books only. The historical evolution of man. But also, much more unwritten book which nobody can ever describe or ever print in a book. Because this thing is this enormous evolution of man, which is the result of at present, that's always moving, changing, modifying itself. It's never static. So, my mind, one's mind must be as alert, as clear to read this book. Right? So, what does the reading of the book mean? The reading, not the book. You understand? The capacity to read. Which is the capacity to observe, the capacity to listen to the story, the capacity to learn what the book is saying. Those three things are involved. That is, the seeing, the hearing what the book says, and learning from the book. Right? You're following this? Are we doing this together? That is, are we together observing the book freely? Or we are interpreting the book? You understand this? I read the book, but my mind is interpreting what the book says according to my desire, my wishes, my longings, my fears, my loneliness. So I am really not reading the book, but telling the book what I am, what I think is. You're following this? So, first I must learn the art, one must learn, one must learn the art of reading, that is the art of observing the book. That is, to observe, to see, without the observer. I'm going to take, please have a little patience, I'm going to it slowly. The observer is the past, right? The observer is the experience accumulated. The observer is all the result of all the influences, pressures, knowledge. With that knowledge, he is reading the book. Capito? Have you understood? But read the book without the past. I wonder if you, are you following this or is it too abstract? No, I don't think it's too abstract. It's quite simple. We think we know. We don't come to the book afresh. Like a schoolboy who goes to school for the first time. He doesn't know. He's fresh, he's young, he wants to learn. And one must read the book in the same way. You must come to it with a freshness. Not with all the accumulated knowledge that you have acquired, which is the book itself. I wonder if you see that. So if you come to it, if you read it as an observer who is already knows the contents of the book, then you are incapable of reading what it says. So you are, there must be the absence of the observer. There is only reading, right? Not translate what you are reading into your own peculiar idiosyncrasies and illusions and desires. This is clear. So there is only reading, which is only observing the book. Then also, the book is telling you a great deal. Right? And can you hear what the book is saying? You understand what I'm saying? Here, the song of the book. Everyone, it is telling you something, obviously. This enormous story it is telling you. But you must be capable of hearing it. Not only reading it, but capable of hearing this tremendous song of life that's going on. Right? So I can either hear with the ear, or hear without the noise of the outside. You understand? I'll show you. I'm going to go into a little bit. When you hear music, your whole, the music which you really love, which is, has meaning, depth, vitality and beauty, not just modern pop noise. Sorry, you may like it, it's a little mad. Then you hear it with all your being, absolutely you're with it. There is not a division between you and it. There is no sense of a remembrance of something which you have heard before. You are with the whole movement. Right? When you hear Bach or Beethoven or Mozart, you the real beauty of it, move with it. In the same way, this one must listen to the story that this book is telling you. May we go on? I hope you're following all this. That's why you are here. If you're not listening, don't waste your time. It's a lovely day. You can go and climb the hills. or play golf, or have a so-called amusing time, but you are here, so please give your attention to what you have, because it's your life. And also, there's the art of learning. It's a little more complex. I'll go into it. When we go to schools and colleges and universities, we are learning. We are acquiring information, which is called knowledge, about various subjects, in order to have a good career, a good job, or if you fail, you go to, and so on, which is the accumulation of knowledge during a certain period of time, from the boy till you leave university, which is the accumulation of knowledge which can be used skillfully or otherwise. If you want to be a plumber, you must be. If you want to be a professor, if you want to be a scientist, if you want to be a mathematician, it's all, the whole process is the same. To learn, which is to accumulate knowledge, and from that knowledge, act. Right? And there is also act, and from that action, learn. Which is also there, isn't that clear? Of course. Which is the accumulated knowledge and act. Act and learn. Which also, after acting, learning, accumulated knowledge, act. Both are the same, essentially. But also, there is another kind of learning, which is a little more difficult. These two we know. Accumulated knowledge and act. Act and having acted, learn from your action, which becomes the knowledge, and so both are the same. Now we are saying something entirely different, because this is mechanical. Are you following all this? Because this is a process of acting from the known. The conductor, the pianist, the plumber, the fiddler, the professor, the scientist, all of these have accumulated knowledge and act. Therefore, they are moving from the known to the known to the known to the known, modifying all the time. Right? Now we are saying there is a different way of learning. I don't know if you are interested in this, because this requires a little more thinking together. One sees the accumulation of knowledge is necessary. To drive a car and so on and so on. If you want to build a bridge, you must know the whole stresses and the strains and the quality of the earth and so on and so on. That is, our mind has been informed, acquired knowledge, and acting from there. This is the everlasting movement of man. You understand? That is, gather information, knowledge, act. So the knowledge is the past, of course. And from that knowledge, you act. This is clear, isn't it? Right? We must meet together, otherwise I'm talking to myself, which is no good. I can do that in my room. So we are saying there is a different kind of learning, which hasn't its root in the known. Right? In the known, in the sense, knowledge and acting. See the difference? I'm going to point out carefully this. There is acquiring knowledge and then acting from it. So there is action modifies the knowledge, and the knowledge modifies the action. This is what we are doing all the time. Therefore, it becomes routine, mechanical. There's never a freedom to inquire into something which is not known. A freedom from the known to observe something you do not know. You follow? I wonder if you know. Are we meeting each other? Little bit. So, to the speaker, a sense of man does not lie in the accumulated knowledge. Right? Listen to it first. Don't agree or disagree. First listen. We have people, scientists, others have said man can only evolve by having more and more knowledge. Climbing ascent. But knowledge is always the past. And if there is no freedom from the past, his ascent will be always limited. Right? He'll always be confined to a particular pattern. So we are saying, look, and we are saying there is a different way of learning, which is to see comprehensively, wholly, holistically, the whole movement of knowledge, right? Where it is necessary, because otherwise you couldn't live. But in the very understanding of its limitation is to have insight into the whole movement of knowledge. I don't know if I've conveyed anything at all. I'll go into it. Probably most of you have never thought even about this. We have taken knowledge as factual and live with knowledge and go on functioning with knowledge for the rest of our life. But we have never inquired if what is knowledge itself, what is its relationship to freedom, what is its relationship to the actual happening. You see, we have taken all this for granted. That's part of our educational condition. So we are saying, when you begin to inquire into the whole movement of knowledge, which is time, which is thought, and see the limitations of knowledge, for knowledge is always in the past, and therefore fragmentary. You can add to it, take away from it, enlarge it, limit, but it's always the movement of the past, modifying itself. And so in that movement, there's never freedom. And this, you may not have gone into this, right? So we are, this may be new to you, so please kindly listen to find out. Not to agree or disagree, find out. We are saying, in that field, there is no freedom for man. You may be able to have more, better bathrooms, better heating system, solar and so on, so on, so on. But psychologically, inwardly, there is no freedom. If I'm if the mind is constantly being driven or held or in bondage to the past. So, is there a way of learning which is not in merely acquiring knowledge? You understand my question? I wonder if you'll see. Please listen. Is there a way of looking, learning, hearing, which is not the constant accumulation of knowledge from which to act? Is there an action which is not bound by the past? I'll put it this way, then perhaps we'll understand each other. That is, I acquired knowledge, there's the acquisition of knowledge, and from that knowledge, act. And in that action, that very action is limiting itself. It's not holistic. It's not the whole. If there are regrets, there are all kinds of travail in that action coming to be. Now we're asking, is there an action which hasn't its roots in the past? Because if my action is born of the past, is always limited, it's always broken up, it's never complete, whole. So is there an action which is free from the past? You understand my question? Just understand the question, then we can go into it. You may say that question is silly, it has no meaning. But it has meaning when you see the whole complexity of knowledge and its limitation. And the action that's born out of this limitation must be limited, and therefore confusing, and therefore out of this knowledge a good society can never come into being. You get it? So we are asking, is there action without the movement of the past? I say there is, which is to have an insight into the whole structure of knowledge. Insight. A deep understanding, total comprehension of this whole thing. Knowledge, action, limited, no freedom, therefore out of that there can be no good society. To see that, the truth of it, the perception of that truth is the release of a different kind of learning which is holistic. I wonder if you get this. Are you working with, we are working together, or we are just listening? Look, sir, let me put it this way. What is the relationship between man and woman? What is the relationship? Generally, as a generally accepted, relationship means to be together sexually. In action, you earn a livelihood, and the wife remains or goes out to earn a livelihood. Cooking, your relationship, it implied all that. Affection, irritation, nagging, changing to don't like the one girl or one boy, go to another. This process is relationship. It's called. We're asking, what is actual relationship? Is there such thing at all? I'm not saying there is, we are inquiring. Therefore, there is no dogmatic statement in this matter. What is actually a relationship based on? Please, inquiring, you,
You're already somebody. Life is relationship. You cannot exist without relationship. But what is that relationship? You see, it's love. And one is rather shy of that word. Because love is loaded with all kinds of idiotic meanings. And it generally goes with the word sex. Therefore, love becomes mere sexual pleasure. But actually, when you go into the question of relationship, what is it based on? It's based, is it not, on the images that you have built about each other. Obviously. These two images have relationship. You're following this? No? I know you don't like, perhaps you may not like this idea or this actual fact, but you have to swallow it, whether you like it or not. The fact is, each one creates the image of the other, and these images have some kind of relationship, because each one goes his own way. Ambition, greed, uno, separating all the time, perhaps coming to land there, but that's not relationship. That's superficial, sensational, pleasurable. But actually, this image is the divisive factor between the two. Now, the mechanism of this building image is the remembrance. Remembrance of what she said, of what you said. The remembrance of your sexual images and so on and so on. The image of being kind, being angry, being angry, and so on and so on. You have built a great image about each other. This is the movement of hope, which is the remembrance. Now we are saying, can there be a relationship without the image? And that's the only relationship. Now, to see the truth of this, to see that where there is image, there is division, and therefore, if you have an image about her and she has an image about you, these images keep people apart. If you see the full significance of this, which can, then the mechanism of building images ends. Naturally, because all life is a relationship. The relationship with nature, with each other, with the heavens, it's a relationship. But if we have an image about the heavens, not the heaven, but heavens, cosmos, the universe, if you have an image about it, you have no relationship. If you have an image about nature, the image is more important than the actuality. So, when you see the truth of this, the image making comes to an end. Then you can have, then there is a possibility of actual relationship with nature, with the universe, that which is love, which we're going to understand. So, we are saying there is a way of learning, which is immediate action. It's not born out of knowledge. Which is not impulsive action. Which is not emotional romantic action. But is the action born out of the comprehension of the whole movement of knowledge, which is the truth of the limitation of knowledge. Now my mind, the mind, is prepared to read. You follow? Prepare to read the book without any distortion, because in no illusion, without any sense of is he able to hear the whole story completely without say I like or I don't like. If you want, it's really like music. There's no part, you say I don't like that part. It's music. And to learn from that book, in the very reading is an action. Not reading, an action. Because if you know, then it becomes memory and limited an action. I hope you understand all this. It's marvelous way to me. So the mind is prepared to read. And it discovers, please listen to it, discovers the book is the mind. Right? The book is the consciousness. The book isn't out there on a pedestal for me to read, but the book is this whole content of my consciousness, of your consciousness. Greed, envy, this, the other. So, you find this? The book is not there, book is here. Right? Then, how will you read the book if it's here? You follow my question? Where thought reading is there, but the book is this, this enormous, this quality of mind, which is capable of such distortions, capable of such great events, technologically, capable of disorder, capable of such great fierce anxieties, brutalities, violence, affection, joy, all that. So the book is this. Right? So what am I reading? Before, see what has taken place. Before, I thought the book was out there for me to read. But now I've discovered the book is this thing itself. Therefore, it can only read when there is absolute quiet observation in relationship. You're getting this? It's only in relationship I can, the book and the read. The relationship is my actuality. My wife, my friend, with my dog, with my nature, with the hills, with the beauty of the life, this man, and so on. Right? So, there is no conflict. I'm not telling the book what it should be. Then there's conflict. But if the book is me, then the end of division. Right? The end of escape. The end of inhibition. Because me. So there is no control. There is no desire different from the book itself. I wonder if you're capturing this. Because then the whole movement of conflict, struggle, becoming better, trying to, in a group, understand myself, all that ends. Because the thing is there. And you discover the whole movement of it in daily relationship. But in that relationship, you're observing there's no conflict. sleep.
Oh, 28.
This is here. We can go into a question now, into something totally different, which is, why has man, throughout the ages, from ancient of days, suffered? Understand? It's a really very important question. And apparently man has never any sorrow. Right? Christianity has escaped from it by saying somebody else suffers for me. And oh, the Redeemer, you know, the whole business. And the Asiatics have translated it by saying it's your past karma, which is past action. Past life, for which you are paying now. If you behave properly, next life you will live in a palace. Or better, you know, because you're becoming a boot black, you'll be a lawyer. And so on and so on. Which is self-improvement. See the danger of all both of these tricks we play upon each other. Escaping through an ideology, from something, through a concept, through an image, and the other, explanation of sorrow, the cause of the past. That is, the cause, the event. But the event becomes the cause. Cause. No? Have you understood this? Must everything be explained? Look, there is a cause and the effect. But the effect becomes, modifies itself, which then becomes the cause for another effect. So it's a constant cause-effect. The effect becomes the cause all the time. And man, you, we human beings, whether we live here or in Asia or in India or anywhere else, we have this extraordinary burden of sorrow. Not only this so-called personal sorrow, but the collective sorrow of mankind. Huh? The poor man in a little village in India can never be had hot bath, clean clothes, have knowledge, can never ride in an aeroplane, can never see the beauty of the earth, because he's toiling. And the thousands of people who have been killed in war, and the mothers, their girlfriends, their wives weeping, you follow? There is the sorrow of the world, as well as your own little sorrow. I don't know if you're wanting to even thought about it. We're only concerned with our own little sorrows, with our own tears. And hay fever, that's all this much. So there is not only personal, immediate sorrow of various kinds. The ultimate sorrow is death. Death of someone whom you think you love, whom you think, on whom you have depended, who have been a companion, and so on and so on. But also there is this immense collective sorrow of mankind. So we're asking whether this sorrow can ever end. Because if it doesn't end, There is no love. Cannot have a good society. There can be no goodness. So one must find out not only one's own personal sorrow, but it can end or also not to contribute to the vast collective sorrow. Please, sir, this is very, very serious. I don't, it's not a thing you play with. It's not a thing you argue and have opposing camps about sorrow. Nobody, no redeemer, no savior has ever helped man to free from sorrow. They have helped to escape from sorrow. So we are asking a very, very serious question. And only a very serious mind, a mind that has gone through all that we have discussed, can find out or ask the serious question whether sorrow, our own particular in personal limited sorrow, and whether it's possible not to add to the vast stream of sorrow. So, what is sorrow? You say? No, sir. In asking a question of this kind, and asking questions which you have asked previously, the question is not, and the inquiry is not an analytical process. It is not analysis. You understand? I must explain this little bit. Analysis implies division, the analyzer and the analyzed. The analyzer is the past, right? What he has learned from Freud, you know, the whole psychological knowledge and the various divisions in this professional psychological structure. So, the analyzer is different from the analyzed. Is that so? Or the analyzer is the analyzed? Please inquire, sir. Then, of course it is. I am examining my inhibition, if I have any, and I'm analyzing, to go back to my childhood or something or other, past incident, and I'm analyzing it, right? So there is a division. And we are saying the analyzer is the analyzer. That is the observer, that is seeing the truth that the division is illusory. The analyzer is the analyzer. The experiencer is the experience. Right? You following on me? We say, I must have experience. We are searching for bigger, wider, nobler, extensive, godly experience, mystic experience, all that, which shows that the experiencer is different from that which is experiencing. In that process, the experience must recognize the experience. Otherwise, it shouldn't be experience. So, the very recognition is the remembrance of something which is there. So, the experiencer is the experience. The thinker is the thought. Thought is not different from the thinker. So the analyzer is the analyzed. I won't, it's good enough for the moment to discard it or take it. I mean, it is a fact, we go into it. So we are, when we ask a question, we are not analyzing. We are observing. only observation. There is no analysis because you are observing and the thing is revealing itself. You are not telling it. It is telling you. So there is only pure observation. So in the same way we're asking the question, why man who is the repository of 1,000 years of sorrow, not only personal, but this collective burden of sorrow. And why mankind has put up with it. Probably he has not been able to solve it. He hasn't the capacity to say, look, I don't know how to do with what to do with this thing. I suffer, I cry, I know I'm lonely, I wanted success, I failed, you know, grief, sorrow, this sense of frustration, inhibition, all that's implied in that one word and more. And we're asking, we're saying, we're observing, not analyzing. Why has man put up with this thing? You don't tolerate a toothache. You do something about it immediately. But man has not done this, has not freed himself from this. Is it because he's incapable? Or he has accepted it, it has become a habit, and so he says, I can't solve it. I can't free myself from it. And I can't, please help me. He says, God, Christ, Krishna, Buddha, somebody outside, please take away my soul. And that hasn't worked either. One can escape into it, but that is not. In actuality, it's there. You may go to church every Saturday, or you pray 5 times a day. But it's there. So we are now asking why, man, you have not resolved. What is sorrow? Please answer it. Put that question to yourself. What is sorrow? The loss of somebody? Loss of your particular wishes, your desires? Loss of somebody on whom you have relied, loss of companionship, a sorrow, this enormous sense of isolation, loneliness. So what we're asking, what is the relationship between the me and the you, in essence? The me that appears when you are not there, right? The me that seeks fulfillment in something or other, noble or ignoble, imaginary or reality, and the fulfillment is denied, and I feel frustrated, inhibited, miserable, depressed. Is that the reason of sorrow? Or one has really never lived with sorrow. Lived, not run away from it. You understand my question? Please understand this. One has not rationally explained it away. Logically said, yes, that was the cause, this is the effect, and therefore I suffer. You follow? We are asking, not if analyzing, are all these the reason of sorrow, the cause of sorrow? Or is there something much deeper than the peripheral incidents that bring about sorrow? Yes? Well, most of us are caught in the peripheral incident accidents that bring about grief. And we're trying to resolve those outward incidents, and not being able to resolve them, we escape. But perhaps we have resolved them, but there may be much deeper cause. And this enormous, endless sorrow of man. What is that deep cause? You see, sir, I'm inquiring. The speaker is inquiring. Are you inquiring too? You understand my question? Or are you only concerned with the peripheral sorrows of fulfillment, not fulfilling? I am angry, my wife leaves me, and my husband goes away. Yes, you follow? Is that the pity, little sorrows that we have collected, and say that's sorrow, and that we want to be free of those? That's very easy. Those are pity, rather immature, and they can be let aside. We can resolve them quite easily. But we're asking, is there a deep cause for this abiding, everlasting sorrow of man? If the speaker points out the cause, and there is a cause which the speaker has discovered, what value has it? This is not a trick I'm playing. What will it do to you if I tell you this is it? This is the real, this is the truth why mankind suffers. What will you do with it? You understand? Or will you say that, yes, that's a very good idea, I must think about it. Perhaps it might help me to get rid of my sorrow. You follow me? Sir, somebody gives you a precious jewel. What will you do with it? You say? And what will you pay for it? Naturally, if you are merely paying with it, coin of thought, then it's valueless. It's no longer a joke. But if you say, the jewel is the thing, the most precious in my life, too, I must hold it, I must look at it, then you are giving your heart, your mind, your blood, everything to hold to that. So what is the deep cause of mankind? cause which brings such enormous burden of sorrow, not only the personal, but this vast collective burden. Do you want me to tell you? Huh? Be clear, please. Don't just shake your head. Be very clear. That you have, accepted the question. You understand? That you have received the question. With all your mind, your heart, your whole being. Because that's the most vital question that will totally resolve not only the petty problems, resolve the conflict of man. If you receive that question completely, the question itself is the answer. Right? Look, you see. See here, if you ask the question, either you are expecting someone to answer it, or you are thinking, right? Trying to find an answer. But thinking or waiting for somebody else to answer your question is not going to resolve it. Right? So how you receive the question is important. How you approach the question. If your approach is holistic, complete, then the answer is there. But if you say, well, tell me about it. Lean back and wait. Or ask your priest or your guru or your book or your Maharaj to tell you. There is no meaning. They have told you 1,000 times. So, it's like, you know, sir, like in a lake, you drop a stone. The lake is so still, and you drop a stone, and the waves go on. The question is that stone that you drop in the lake. You understand? Right, sir. There are several things I meant to have talked about this morning, like love and death and meditation. We have no time now, but we'll do it next Saturday and Sunday. Because those are also very essential questions. Questions that demand total answer. The nature of meditation. What is death? What is the movement of life and death? And what is the meaning of love? We're going to that next time. But enough.